In a world divided by red lines, where surveillance cameras track every movement and people disappear without explanation, two siblings face an unthinkable abandonment. Their mother remains behind at an art hotel where she works, while her boyfriend, Life, promises to return for her. But when mysterious red lines appear around their home and camper van, Life abandons the children in an empty house with some tins of food and hollow promises. As the siblings watch him disappear down the street, they face a brutal truth. In this new world of arbitrary boundaries and vanishing adults, they have only each other. What happens when the structures of society collapse around you? When the adults who should protect you become unreliable or absent? This is the heart-wrenching reality these children navigate as they discover seven horses in a nearby field, particularly a gray one the sister names Glyph. Little do they know, this horse will become not just a friend, but their salvation in a world increasingly hostile to freedom and authenticity. The abandoned siblings discover unexpected allies throughout their journey. The sister forms a profound bond with Glyph that transcends language, offering unconditional presence in their fractured world. They encounter adults living outside conventional society. Una becomes an ally after the narrator disrupts a man painting red lines. Uliana Youssef provides intellectual context, and they join unverifiables, people invalidated for speaking uncomfortable truths in an abandoned school. Their relationship with Colin Kendrick, a designated data collector wearing a surveillance smartwatch, evolves beyond antagonism. A mutual attraction between Rose and Colin suggests human connection can transcend systems to prevent it. When institutions fail, our capacity to forge connections across differences becomes our greatest strength. In a society fixated on categorization, the siblings' playful approach to language becomes resistance. When Colin demands surnames, the narrator invents Bush, while his sister previously used Taylor Smith, their fluid identities confounding those requiring fixed categories to maintain control. In the library, they explore multiple interpretations of facta sunt ipsa verba from their school. Words themselves are facts deeds, or facts deeds themselves are words, discovering interconnected meanings across languages. Glyph exemplifies this fluidity. A short moment, a glimpse, a transient glance, a sudden fright, an inkling, a sensation of pain or pleasure. When the narrator tells his sister she's chosen a polysemous name for the horse, he celebrates language's resistance to definitive categorization. Meanwhile, the surveillance state attempts to control language by limiting meanings. Colin's smartwatch records everything. His questionnaire reduces experiences to data, and officials confiscate the narrator's novel, revealing contempt for narrative complexity. By maintaining a playful relationship with language, the children preserve their autonomy, their approach to words mirroring their journey, fluid, adaptive, and ungovernable. When abandoned, the narrator comforts his sister through storytelling, establishing a pattern that defines their journey. Among the unverifiables, stories become both currency and connection, helping them make sense of their precarious existence. The Tyrant and the Ash emerges as a powerful refugee tale where a tyrant kills someone for speaking truth, then grows paranoid as their ashes seem to permeate everything. Despite his efforts, the tyrant discovers his opponent has become everywhere and everything, serving as both comfort to the oppressed and warning to oppressors. The narrator's mother transmits values through personal narrative, explaining whistleblowing through her experience at Kindweed, where she was fired for questioning harmful chemicals. Ayesa describes how the narrator's sister brings impossible possible hope through stories about a mother moving mountains, a person who was really a swan, a traveler with an undying flower that sustain them when material conditions offer nothing. During re-ed, section titles lose letters, reflecting the erosion of self. Yet storytelling persists as resistance, with the narrator's final rebellion being to reclaim their narrative, Now that I don't exist, I finally exist again. From the narrator's first encounter with a horse's gentle eye to the climactic escape on horseback, these animals represent both vulnerability to human cruelty and potential liberation from oppressive systems. When the siblings learn the horses will be slaughtered, the sister removes buttercups from their field, a small act of resistance against life's disposability. Uyana shows them Stubbs' painting of a frightened white horse, explaining it represents the sublime, experiences both terrifying and awe-inspiring. Yet Stubbs created this by having a stable boy terrorize a tethered thoroughbred. The sister rejects this cruelty, declaring she would pull that ring right out of that wall. When officials mark Glyph with red paint, the horse reacts furiously, roaring and advancing on them, directly challenging the system. The siblings' escape on horseback, leaving fading red hoofprints, symbolizes freedom through nature. In the conclusion, the narrator imagines finding horses, massive and delicate, strong as horses, suggesting reconnection with nature might offer escape from technological dystopia. Memory functions as a critical battleground against oppression. The narrator confesses they spent the last 5 years of my life not letting myself think any of this, revealing how institutional power works through enforced forgetting. Yet memory fragments persist, like recollections of helping his sister clear harmful flowers for horses. When searching records, the narrator finds their mother was refused re-entry 27 times before her recorded death, while finding nothing about Una or their sister. This official erasure contrasts with the narrator's persistent memories that preserve connections the system tried to eliminate. Dreams store memories too dangerous for conscious thought. In a recurring dream, the narrator walks with their sister to a wooden door in a stone wall. She enters while they hesitate and the door closes. Despite promising to wait, they wake feeling strangely relieved, perhaps because even in dreams, they're keeping their promise. The physical world also holds memories resisting erasure, with their former home triggering recollections despite being covered by artificial grass. Despite its bleak portrayal of authoritarianism, Glyph offers a vision of hope emerging through small acts of connection and courage that persist under oppression. The fable of Sakobanda, a child born with a horse's head who understands all beings, illustrates one form of hope. When officials declare her unverifiable and take her away, her mother's revolt is joined by creatures and objects forming a mountainous movement of righteous fury. More pragmatically, the narrator transfers workers from the harsh packing belt to the humane organic Nadorcot sector. This won't topple the system, but creates meaningful improvement, acknowledging limitations while refusing paralysis. After staging their apparent suicide, the narrator follows the polluted river, meeting a mud-covered boy. They say, "We solve it by salving it," suggesting healing comes through action rather than theory. The final declaration, "We'll be making it up as we go," encapsulates the novel's approach to hope. No grand plan, just willingness to move forward, form connections, and improvise. Using the fragmented glyph paper to clean clay from the boy's face symbolizes how even broken language can heal when applied with compassion.